people say we don't need this war, but I say there's some things worth fighting for. What about our freedom and this piece of ground? We didn't get to keep them by backing down. They say we don't realize the mess we're getting in. Before you start your preaching, let me ask you this, my friend. Have you forgotten how it felt that day to see your homeland under fire and her people blown away? Have you forgotten when those towers fell? We had neighbors still inside, going through a living hell. You took all the footage off my TV, said it's too disturbing for you and me. It'll just breed anger, that's what the experts say. If it was up to me, I'd show it every day. Some say this country's just out looking for a fight. Well, after 9/11, man, I'd have to say that's right. Have you forgotten how it felt that day to see your homeland under fire and her people blown away? Have you forgotten when those towers fell?
Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs.
Somewhere in a distant land, so many miles away.
Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog by the banks of a stream said one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky tonk music.
I'm a honky tonk man. And I can't seem to stop. I love to give the girls a...
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge. Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. Wonders might be okay, I think I got it here. I'm still learning, but let's see what's going on there. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is the, what is it? It's the 11th of January, and it's a Wednesday. And I think I'm going to be learning this new deal here for quite a while, so bear with me. Let me go and check my chat room real fast and make sure we got sound there. Apparently our music was working. So let's see if... see if the voice is working. Got a lot of snow reports here. Peanut Rider, are you kidding me? Peanut Rider's somewhere in California where I think it's not supposed to snow a whole lot. And he's reporting 4 inches of snow in the last 36 hours. That's kind of significant for that part of the country, I think. So, let's see. I haven't got a report back yet. Let's see if we have sound. So, let me check everything here. That's on, that's moving up and down, and that's making little numbers. Okay, so it looks like we're making it. Okay, and we're waiting. Somebody just sent me a message. Okay, Susie B., thank you very much. She's paying attention. She said she's got us there XIAA or whatever in the heck it is. All right, well then let's move on. sound. Hey, Mouse Lady's in there. I guess you figured out how to turn the little popping sound off. Glad to see you in there tonight. All right, before we get going, we're 9 days away from the inauguration. Ordinarily, I'd say this was a wonderful thing, and we should all look forward to it, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and blah, blah, blah. But I'm not so sure about this one. A lot of reports from a lot of different groups. I don't know how many of them are blowing smoke and how many of them are serious. We'll find out here before too long. I said this 2 or 3 times already. I think for those of you in the larger metropolitan areas, particularly back east, you might want to be prepared for some civil unrest. I have no clue what may or may not happen here. So, hey, Radio Doc, Maddie Buck, glad to see you in here. Let me see who all else is in here. We got starting to get some of our old crowd back now. We've finally figured out how to run this cotton picking thing. Minnie, Mouse Lady, change Mouse Lady-a-tron. Wow, that's quite a handle. Peanut Rider, Radio Doc, Rolex, Yakima Glock, Doc, Desert Rat, Charlie Brown, Concretin's still hanging in there. I don't know if Concretin's hanging in there or not. He's probably forgot to turn his thing off there. A couple of anonymous.
All right. Well, anyway, I've kind of told everybody in our circle of friends here locally that, I think that anything happening here in Sholo, at least in the immediate aftermath of something going on, is pretty remote. It may, if it gets very widespread, it may accidentally get up here, but where it would affect us, maybe, is when people need to go to Phoenix or Flagstaff or something like that. If this starts, if it gets wild in D.C. and, in Baltimore and Miami and Los Angeles and Denver and a few places, then I kind of expect this particular event, I kind of expect that we may see some little splinter groups, little peons here and there that kind of want to make a name for themselves because it's going big in some of the other towns. So we may wind up with blocked streets, even in Gallup, New Mexico, or whatever the case may be. So I think that there's enough of a threat that we need to ponder on that. Concrete and is there. Welcome, buddy. Glad to see you in there. I think there's enough of a possibility. The potential is high enough that we shouldn't ignore it no matter where we're at. We may not see it right away in some of these smaller areas. Of course, I don't think that Lima and Matty Buck's going to see it for a while. They're even more remote than we are. But, if they got to go to Grand Junction or something, maybe you will. I don't know. We'll see. Still a little early to tell, but I think probably we ought to be on our toes from the probably about the 18th till the 21st or 22nd. There are 3 or 4 or 5 days, a couple of days before and after, and then we might be able to relax a little bit, and hopefully President Trump will survive his first 100 days and get started on the things he's promised he will do. Very civil unrest, huh, Doc? Yeah. Doc said, I think there will be very civil unrest. Yep, very civil, or very uncivil, as the case may be. Okay, let's see, I had some... Oh, very little. Okay. That sounds better. All right. We've got a few gun-related things here I want to go over here before we do anything else. There's New Hampshire has some constitutional carry legislation here that passes out of committee. I think New Hampshire's got a fairly decent chance of passing this. So we'll keep an eye on that and see if New Hampshire comes in there. That's going to be about, 11 or 12 states now with constitutional carry. I'll have to get on the map and check it out and see for sure. But we got quite a few. And I hate to use that word. Everybody knows that I think constitutional carry is a misnomer. It's not constitutional carry. There is no state, actually, that has constitutional carry. If it was constitutional, there wouldn't be any restrictions at all. They'd just say, okay, well, you got a gun, good for you. Go forth and do your thing. Whatever it is that you're doing, go do it somewhere else. There, as long as there's restrictions, Wyoming says they have constitutional carry, but it's only for residents. And they still have a few other restrictions as well. Goodness, excuse me. So until they get rid of those restrictions and the thing, then I don't use that. I use constitutional carry pretty loosely. Let's see. And Rolex, you may be right. It may be fake anger. It may be all bark and no bite. There are some. I read an article today about some groups out there that are associated with the Communist Party and the Communist Party of, what do they call the one here in America? American Communist Party or whatever. that are pretty dead set on disrupting the inauguration ceremony, whatever it takes. So I think we'll see some. How fast they'll get it squashed and get it out of the way, I don't be anybody's guess. But we'll see. There's lots of snowflakes out there. Let me see. I had a snowflake deal here somewhere. Well, it doesn't matter. I can't play it because we don't have this new broadcaster set up to play these yet. That's too bad. Well, we'll worry about that later. All right. There's, the concealed carry class is coming up. I've got three of them coming up right now. I've got one coming up on the 21st, one on the 28th, one on the 11th. All of them within 35 miles of here. And as I put on Facebook earlier, I said with the current events being as they are, people are starting to wake up. People are starting to take this a little bit more seriously. And we're seeing people that are actually coming and saying, instead of us advertising a class and saying, okay, come one, come all, we're going to have a class in your area, blah, blah, blah. Well, what we're having now is people calling from other towns and saying, hey, what can we do to get the class going in our area? And that's what has happened here since we announced the one in Snowflake. We had people here that have invited us to Sholo, and then a week later, invited us to St. John's. So we've got three classes all within 30 days of each other. Well, quite a bit within 30 days. What, 3 weeks? 3 weeks of each other? So whether this will spill over or not, I think that I don't know how serious these people are. I think they're most of them are wanting to get a permit, and I think the overwhelming majority of them that'll probably be the end of their, okay, I got my minimal amount of training that I needed to get a permit, got my permit in my pocket, my gun in my purse, and I'm ready to go forth and save the world. Still not understanding that there is a long, long way to go and a lot of stuff to, a lot of things involved in carrying a gun and using the gun and all the things that go along with it. And so, but we got to start somewhere. So I'm happy to see it doing what it's doing here. In Ohio, we talked about this, but this happened several months ago or a couple months ago, I guess. And this was in Ohio. A concealed carry instructor, a firearms instructor there, pleaded guilty to negligent out. Now listen to what, I don't get this. I don't get this at all. He pleads guilty to negligent homicide. He's given a short prison term this week in order to do community service after one of his students accidentally killed a shooting range owner during a class he was teaching. Excuse me, I got something tickling my throat there and I'm having a hard time talking to him. What she had done, this the instructor pled guilty to what I'm not sure, but a misdemeanor charge. I didn't know that negligent homicide was a misdemeanor, but anyway. This guy and his daughter, who was helping him teach the concealed carry class at a gun shop in Mount Holly, Ohio, were initially charged after the fatal shooting of the owner of the place, James Baker. Not the James Baker we all know and love with the $20,000 doghouse, but different James Baker. This was last June. The guy was killed when a bullet hit him in the neck after being fired through a wall. This is the third or fourth time that I'm aware of that I've reported here on the shooting bench of people being killed after somebody shooting through a wall. Not on purpose, five times if you count the one John Wesley Hardin killed for snoring back in 1880 or whatever it was. let's see, let me get back to the story here. This student, according to the reports there, was practicing malfunction drills. with what was supposed to have been dummy ammunition, but a live round somehow find its way into the gun.
So let's stop there for a minute.
And let's go back up here. And I guess the single most important thing here is the fact that somehow live ammunition made its way into the classroom. There's some argument amongst instructors there saying, well, you know, this is we're adults. You have a Second Amendment right. That's what we're here. That's what it's all about. Okay, I get that, and I'm okay with that to a point. If it's a non-shooting class and you're wearing your legally concealed or openly carried gun during the class and you leave it holstered, and I make it clear in my class, I said, do not touch the grip of your handgun during this class. If you have a question about it, if we need to address something concerning your gun, raise your hand, let me know. We will together walk to a safe place, clear your weapon, and then we'll address whatever the problem. Do not touch your gun. You will be ejected from this class in a heartbeat. If it's a class where we're shooting, obviously we're going to do our shooting outside, but the same thing goes. When you're in the classroom, zip, nada, don't touch it. If we're doing anything where there would be a malfunction drill of some kind, which we don't usually do malfunction drills in the classroom. If we were to do that, it would only be with my guns. They would be cleared, checked, double-checked by two other people besides myself. There would be no ammunition allowed in the classroom. We've done this. We do this with force-on-force stuff. No ammunition, period. No knives, no real guns, no nothing. All that is put away, locked up in a restricted area people are not allowed to go to until the class is over. And, you know, these people somehow are just not checking thoroughly enough. Somehow this student got a live round in her gun and fired through the wall. Now, the second point here, I guess, is never let the muzzle of the weapon cover anything you're not willing to destroy. This means during classes, during malfunction drills with supposedly dummy ammunition, and you still handle it and point it in such a manner that if it were to fire, for whatever ungodly reason, nobody would be injured. So people get apathetic, lackadaisical here when they think that everything's dummy ammunition, or that it's unloaded, or that it's on safe, or unloaded on safe, both, or whatever it is. And this is what happens. Remember the story here several years ago of the guy was in a church and he wanted to sell his Ruger 9mm to one of the church members there. And they looked around and said, here, let's step in here for a minute. And they stepped in a utility closet there, and he's going to show him the gun. Here's what I have for sale. And he cleared it, or thought he did, fired through the wall and killed the pastor's 7-year-old daughter. I've told the story numerous times of the lady in, what the heck is that place in New Mexico? It's up by the, almost to the Colorado line. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But it's almost to the Colorado line on the west side of Highway 550. And kind of in a remote area. People were just moving into a house out there. The 8-year-old son was playing with another kid in the other room. And the lady unpacked a .22 caliber rifle. It doesn't say whether it was a .223 or a .22-250 or a .22 Magnum or a .22 long rifle. It said .22 caliber. So I don't know. But she unpacked it, fired the gun through. So it was packed, loaded and chambered while they were moving. No, absolutely not. Not loaded or chambered, no nothing. Just no ammunition in it while it's being moved like that. She was unpacking it. Whatever she did, of course, the news article said that the gun went off. The gun didn't went off. She somehow actuated the trigger, shot through the wall, killed her 8-year-old son. So you cannot be too careful with these things. These things do happen from time to time. There's probably a whole bunch of them that we hear about that never got, hey, C7 has joined us. Yeah. Yeah, C7, it was that way for quite a while. Matter of fact, for that particular class, I would allow guns in if you had questions about it, but I did not allow ammunition in the room, period. If someone wanted to bring a gun in and had questions, there were several people brought them in, laid them on the table or whatever, but they were checked. Either me or Jason checked them before they went into the classroom. Everything was empty. And no ammunition was allowed in the classroom, period. None. Not a single round. So, anyway. We hear of these places where, you know, people get careless. It's empty. It's unsafe. Don't worry about it. And they wind up hurting somebody or killing somebody. Unfortunate and 100% preventable. Percent preventable. Wow. Having a hard time there. Tell you what we're going to do here real quick. I got to get my throat clear. I don't know what the heck's going on here, so I'm going to see if I can't do something about that. And if you'll hang with me, I'll be back here in a minute and we'll talk some more about this. Stand by.
She left without leaving a number. Said she needed to clear her mind. He figured she'd gone back to Austin, 'cause she talked about it all the time. It was almost a year before she called him up. Three rings and an answering machine is what she got. If you're calling about the car I sold it, if this is Tuesday night, I'm bowling. If you got something to sell, you're wasting your time. I'm not buying. If it's anybody else, wait for the tone. You know what to do. And P.S., if this is Austin, I still love you. The telephone fell to the counter. She heard, but she couldn't believe. What kind of man would hang on that long? What kind of love that must be? She waited 3 days, and then she tried again. She didn't know what she'd say, but she heard three rings and then. If it's Friday night, I'm at the ball game, and first thing Saturday, if it don't rain, I'm headed out to the lake, and I'll be gone all weekend long. But I'll call you back when I get home on Sunday afternoon. P.S., if this is Austin, I still love you. Well, this time she left her number, but not another word. Then she waited by the phone on Sunday evening, and this is what he heard. If you're calling about my heart, it's still yours. I should have listened to it a little more. Then it wouldn't have taken me so long to know where I belong. And by the way, no machine you're talking to. Can't you tell this is Austin? And I still love you. I still love you.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
All right, and we're back. Hey, Radio Doc, no, I wasn't talking about Bondad. That was Bondad's on the east side of the road, and it's a little closer to the Colorado line. It's more back towards towards Cedar Hill. Matter of fact, it's just up the road, maybe 5 miles from Cedar Hill off to the left as you're headed north there on the west side of the road. But Canyon, something, Cox Canyon, that's where it was, Cox Canyon, where that lady lived. So I'm glad we got all that settled. Okay, we've had enough of that. Let me go find my other story here. This was something I thought some of you might find interesting, some of you maybe not so much, but I'm going to try to do a little bit more gun stuff on Wednesday nights, along with some of our other stories. So, let's see here. This is a guy that had a this is kind of a duel here between the .22 Magnum and the .380 in ballistic gelatin. I found it pretty interesting, although not surprising. With as much experience as I've gotten, much as I've shot the .22 Magnum, I think it's safe to say that I'm a fan. Not a real big fan of a carry size gun, you know, small revolvers, small semi-automatic in a .22 Magnum. Although I think you could do worse. I just never have been that big a fan. Of course, I'm not a big fan of 380 either, but these two together, it's kind of surprising what they did here. Stand by 1 second. I'll be right back. Told you I'd be right back already. This, let me find, there we go. So, obviously, one of the biggest debates, whether it's here on the Shooting Bench, on the chat room, Facebook, magazines, you know, wherever, any place they talk about guns, there's probably not too many subjects come up that start arguments and cause divorces and stuff any more than the effectiveness of people's pet rounds. When realistically, you know, in a certain range of calibers, there's just not that much difference in them. You know, a few percent one way or the other, but you know, it's probably more in the operation and the handling of the smaller guns that's probably more important, should be more concerned about than the stopping power of it. But there is a limit to that. You can get down to, once you get down into 25s, 32s, you know, 380 has always been the smallest thing that we ever recommended to anyone. Most people, you know, once in a while we'd find a lady that had, you know, bad arthritis and couldn't move her hands very well, and we'd get her down into a 32 or something. And I, truth be known, I'd rather see somebody armed with a 25 than nothing. It's not a great choice by any remote stretch of the imagination, but it's better than a pocket full of marbles. So, given the history of these two, you know, The 22 Magnum was designed specifically for, originally for rifles. There were no handguns for it. And not too long after that, the Ruger Single 6 came out with a convertible barrel for the 22 Magnum. It was quite a long time after that before they finally come out with some double action revolvers, and even then, not too much in the line of concealed carry type, you know, pocket revolvers and stuff. And then Freedom Arms and some of these other outfits come out with the little bitty revolvers. And then, when was it? Probably, 2016? Probably about 17. Yeah, 17. Amy reminded me, it's 2017. Probably about, I don't know, 2006 or somewhere in there, a little before, a little after, when they started looking at the, the SP-101 or whatever it is, the Ruger, and the LCR, and some of those little guns. They started looking at it as a serious contender for a pocket gun. And being around since 1959, it's had a lot of different guns made for it. The only semi-automatic that I'm aware of in a handgun was made by Arcadia Machine and Tool, AMT Hardballer, a copy of their, actually I don't know if they called it the Hardballer, but it was a copy of their Hardballer in 45 ACP. And it was, it worked okay, but it was never great, and there wasn't a lot of them out there. And AMT has long since gone the way of Edsel and disappeared from the planet for the most part. And it's pretty hard to find parts, anything for any of the AMT guns. AMT had the AMT backup, which is a little 380. And they had a couple of 45s. I don't remember how many. Not a lot. And this 22 Magnum in a 1911-style platform. But be that as it may, as it is right now, I don't believe there are any semi-automatic handguns out there for the 22 Magnum. The 380, on the other hand, designed and developed back in 1908, was designed specifically for semi-automatic handguns. And small ones at that. There has been a few fairly large guns. Matter of fact, I think it was either Taurus, I think maybe it was Steyr, that made a 21-shot 380 in a fairly large semi-automatic handgun. So anyway, this guy had an LCR, a little lightweight revolver, and the and a 380, the Taurus Curve in 380. So he decided to test them. It's not that far off. There's the inch difference, but the 22 Magnum had an 7/8 inch barrel, typical little snub nose revolver length, and the 380 had a 2 3/4 inch barrel. The ammunition that he used was, I guess he put a lot of thought into this. He had Speer gold dots and Hornady critical defense, but he decided, I guess, that these were, didn't want to use them for whatever. That, to me, that would be the obvious thing to use. But anyway, he stuck with something that he could find easily at the big box stores. So it was 50 grain jacketed hollow point for the on the heavy end of the 22 Magnums, and the CCI's 40 grain solid full metal jacket, which was the standard for many, many, many years. And then the lighter, faster 30 grain hollow point, the plus V round. So he had three different weights for the 22 Magnum. And they optimistically kind of advertised these velocities at 1,800 to 2,200 feet per second. Obviously, that's not going to be what it is in a inch and 7/8 inch barrel. So the fastest ones, the 30 grain bullets out of the LCR, got him an average of 1,107 feet per second, half of what was advertised. Okay, then that, by his calculations here, by his research, he has proven what I've always said: a 22 Magnum in a handgun is about the same as a 22 long rifle out of a regular rifle. So if you'd had a little bit longer barrel, you know, 6 or 8 inch barrel, he'd probably be getting, I don't know, 1,300-1,400 feet a second out of it. But anyway, he's getting 1,107 feet a second, so he's getting a standard velocity 22 long rifle velocities out of this thing. However, using quite a bit heavier bullets, so there's a big difference between a 29 or 30 grain hollow point in a 22 long rifle and this 30 grain plus V varmint round out of the 22 Magnum. So the 380 was a little more simple. He used 95 grain full metal jacket. I don't think that's really a fair comparison, using a full metal jacket against a hollow point, unless he got up to the 40 grain hollow point or 40 grain full metal jacket in the 22 Magnum. But anyway, that one clocked in at 887 feet per second, and still is twice the bullet weight, more a little over twice the bullet weight of the three times the bullet weight actually of the 22 Magnum. So as he fired through this, he's got some pictures here, pretty interesting on this ballistic gelatin. Now, before I go any farther, I'm going to go here and check the chat room before it gets too far away from me here and see what's going on. Looks like Mouse Lady is leaving us or left us. So let's see. C7, I'm sure glad you dropped in here tonight. I was wondering, I texted you the other day and you never did answer me back, so I was wondering what happened to you there. So let's see. Minnie, thanks for posting the update there on DeTinker. I know he's having a lot of trouble with his eyes. He's the heart and soul of the Survival Circle Radio Network. He does a lot of work in the background there. So I would encourage everyone to keep DeTinker in your prayers and thoughts there and see if we can get him back in the saddle here before too long. Let me bear with me here just a second. I'm just breezing down through the chat room here. Doc, I'm not really a big fan of pistol grip shotguns either. If it's pistol grip only, I don't mind pistol grip too bad on Remingtons. I don't like them on Mossbergs because of where the controls are located. But pistol grip only, maybe in a vehicle or something where you're going to be fighting in the vehicle, but I'm not a real big fan of them. And I try hard to encourage people, and people always get these for their wives, whatnot. No, not a great plan. Not a fan of those at all. They look bad on TV, and everybody that they're just marginally useful, I think. all right, let's move on back to our story here. I got. With this deal here, I'm able to keep two different. What do you call it? Anyway, I've got Google Chrome and Firefox both running here, so I've got all kinds of stuff. And this computer's all right. So they fired the rounds at close range into the jail. He said at a distance of about 2 feet. He said only one block was shot during the test, and it measured 13 inches. So 3 of the 4 bullets passed completely through the block. The wound track, however, is what he found interesting. Now, let's go back to the distance. If this fired through 13 inches, it's saying that, isn't it the FBI that says, didn't the FBI say that they need at least 9 inches? Is that what it is? Or maybe, I don't remember what they say. But anyway, this traveled completely through 13 inches of ballistic gelatin. Pretty good for both rounds, I'd say. The 30-grain bullet in the .22 Magnum was the benchmark round for that round. And after stretching the block 2 inches in, said the round skimmed through the block, creating a cavity that ran from the 4 to 9 inch mark with a maximum diameter of 0.5 inch. Now, not terribly impressive, but said the 40-grain full metal jacket zipped right through the block with minimal damage, but took a straight path. The 50-grain hollow point was last. This round sailed through the block before it tumbled and came to a rest at 11 and 3/4 inches. So, for my money, I think that regardless of what these gel blocks show, I think the heavier bullet in a hollow point in a small gun like that would probably be the way to go. So the 380 said the 380 full metal jacket streaked right next to the 30 grain 22 Magnum track. Said it went the full length of block. The entry hole was only slightly bigger and the width of the cavitation the same as the 22 Magnum. Now, that's not saying a whole lot for the 380 because it's a third of an inch, a little over a third of an inch already. And the 22 Magnum is less than a quarter of an inch. So if both tracks were a half inch in diameter, give or take, then the 22 Magnum seems like it expanded better and did a little better in that short distance. Said the cavitation, let's see, entry hole slide, the cavitation starts a bit later at the 6 to 10 inch mark, and it lacked the same initial stretching as the 30 grain 22 Magnum. So the 22 Magnum with the higher velocity, even though it's a lighter, smaller diameter bullet, the higher velocity has made it work, which is always my problem with the .45 ACP is it just didn't have the velocity, you know, for years to make the bullet work like it was supposed to. Oh, but it's already .45 caliber. Well, it's all right. That's about as big as any of them is going to get until about 1998 is when that started changing. So, closing this up, it says that the, going strictly by the numbers, the 380 in the sure penetrating full metal jacket configuration outperformed all the 22 Magnum loads, but barely. Against the best performer, the 30 grain CCI hollow point plus V, against the best performer, the 30 grain CCI HP plus V, the 380 round barely emerges intact, so to speak. Upset in the jail was a touch longer with the 380, and the initial bullet hole is somewhat larger. Is this worth carrying around the 380 ACP when compared against the 22 Magnum? The 380 lives in a small automatic pistols for fast firepower, but these small handguns tend not to be the most easy to shoot accurately without good practice. You will still need practice with the 22 Magnum, but the recoil is far more forgiving for pleasant and therefore accurate shooting. Okay, I'll give him that. I agree with that. But one thing you need to know about the 22 Magnum out of a gun that small, the muzzle blast is excruciating. Those little guns are freaking loud. Very, very, very loud. Said the classic 380 ACP is no slouch, but if you're considering the lighter 22 Magnum options, don't be dissuaded. All right, that's a neat story. I like that. I've never compared the two in ballistic gelatin, so I think that's a good little bit of research done for us there. All right, let's go. Let's go over here and close this minute real quick. One thing I do like about this new program better is I can turn the mic off and it doesn't make that big loud click that it always for the last 5 or 6 years have been doing. All right, we've got a lot of discussion here about the pistol grip shotgun. Let's see, 44 special. 44 special is a neat round. It's it was pretty popular for quite a few years. Not so much now, and I don't understand why. It's I can see, and there's still a few little guns, Charter Arms, and a couple other ones still make some little 2-inch, 3-inch revolvers for it. Not a bad choice. Recoil is pretty tolerable. Noise is not too bad, and that's a pretty good size round. If I were going to carry a revolver, I would look pretty seriously at that for me. That little Charter Arms Bulldog was a pretty good little revolver. I had one of those for a while years ago, and I thought it was a pretty neat little gun. Not hard to shoot at all, but I have gone the way of the Glock, and I don't do revolvers much anymore. Let's see. Yakima Glock's first shotgun is Remington or Mossberg 500, 18 is Butler Creek. Yakima Glock, what's NFA? You talking about the thing that Rolex put on? Oh, yeah. Huh, that's quite a setup there. Okay, folding stock shotgun there. I'm just, if it works for you, you know, then you go for it by all means, but I'm not a fan of folding stock shotguns whatsoever. I'm just not. I think, or pistol grip, either one. I'm okay with shorter barrels, but I still like a full stock on it. I've got a picture, Peanut Rider. I'll have to go find it. I've got it on my phone, but I don't think I have it on the computer here. But the High Standard had a 22 Magnum, had an over and under Derringer, and they made a leather wallet for it. And it was pretty popular back in the day, and I think that there was some, I think the ATF had a problem with that for some reason. I don't remember what it was. A Peanut Rider might know. But whatever it was, it kind of went away. You still see one once in a while on Gun Broker or something. But the idea there was, during those times, that was back in the 60s, 70s, maybe early 80s, was the last time I saw one. And you can, the idea here was that this leather wallet that was in, right in the center of the wallet was a hole about the size of a quarter. And you say, okay, wait, I'll give you my money. Let me give you my wallet. And you reach in, pull this wallet, stick your finger through the middle of the thing and shoot right through the wallet, through the open end of the wallet. And, they were pretty popular back in the day. They're a little slow to employ, I think, in a fast draw type situation, but there is some merit to the idea that very concealable, couldn't see it. It was a wallet, and there were no. It was a very, very slim gun, two rounds, probably had a inch and a half, 2-inch barrel, maybe. No, probably inch and a half, and. In your back pocket, you could look, you know, from 2 feet away, and you couldn't tell that it was a gun. It just looked like a wallet. So that was a pretty neat deal. All right. Hang on a minute. Dang it. All right. I'm back. Yeah, C7, the starting to see 22 Magnums come back a little bit. Man, it's been 3.5, 4 years, I guess, that it was almost impossible to find. But we're in the last year or so, starting to see a little bit more come around. Still not nearly what it used to be as far as 22 Magnum ammunition. It's more expensive and harder to find. But another way to look at it, and the story we just talked about kind of goes along with that, is even if you pay $15 for 22 Magnums, they're not 22s. I know. I paid $3.50 for a many a damn box of 22 Magnums back in the day. Paid $5, $5.50, $6 for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of boxes of that stuff when I was shooting silhouettes with the 22 Magnum. And so it really tears me up to see them go up to $12, $15, $18. But if you look at the performance that we just talked about compared to the 380, look at the price of 380s. You're looking $25, $30 for a 50 round box, and so you're still getting 22 Magnums. And from the way this story talks here, as far as defensive stuff goes, you're still getting your more bang for the buck by getting the 22 Magnums at $15 a box for a box of 50. If you're looking at varmint hunting, look at 50 rounds of good quality 223s. Yeah, I know the 22 Magnum doesn't reach out nearly as far as the 223, but it's still a good little varmint round out to 200, 250 yards if you've got a good gun and a good trigger finger. But so it's it's still, to me, it's still kind of a bargain. Even though it's high, ticks me off. I try not to think about what the prices were, 30 years ago. But it's still a bargain compared to, if you look at the performance of that gun, what it'll do. Anything from self-defense, not a plinker. It's not anything you want to go out and just blast 500 rounds just goofing around shooting pine cones out of a tree or something. But if you take it a little more seriously and use it for, you get it sighted in, just a minimal amount of recreation and practice with it and use it for serious stuff, 500 rounds will go a long, long ways with the 22 Magnum, just like 500 rounds of 308s or 223s would if you're not shooting it for recreation all the time. So, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Alrighty, well, we're getting pretty close to time here, so I think I'm still learning this new deal, and there's so many things. This is such an amazing deal to me that it's this broadcaster here does so many things, so many buttons and gadgets and pulleys and bells and whistles and menus and stuff all over the place. And so it's probably going to take me like 6 months here to get it all figured out. But we did manage to muddle through another show, excuse me, and I promise I will be getting podcasts up starting, I doubt if I'll do it tonight because I've got to get up early and I've got some other paperwork I need to take care of tonight, but at the very latest, and I'm sorry for the delay, but at the very latest, this weekend, I will have all the podcasts that I have caught up. We're missing quite a few because we missed quite a few shows with the problems we were having. But we're on track now, and I think everything's going well. Amy will be back with us Friday. With Living Way Out Here, she'll be back at 8 o'clock Pacific time, followed by Liberty Lounge. Now, Liberty Lounge is still a little bit of a struggle for me, the way this broadcaster works. But we did okay last Friday. It worked out all right. So we'll muddle through it again this coming Friday. So with all that being said, I think I'm going to be out of here, and we'll see you guys Friday. Good night. Thanks for joining me.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
Says it all.